Mitta,
one another.
Yada,
when,
Esham,
of them,
Bhavata,
will take place,
Sivada,
quarrel,
Madhu
Amada,
intoxication by drinking,
Atamra
Valochananam,
of their eyes being copper red.
Esham,
of them.
Vadupaya,
means of disappearance.
Iyan,
like this.
Vata,
besides this.
Anya,
alternative.
Mai,
on my.
Ujite,
disappearance.
Antadadhate,
will disappear.
Swayam,
themselves.
Sma,
certainly.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
When they quarrel among themselves, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of drinking, madhu, then only will they disappear. Otherwise, it will not be possible. On my disappearance, this incident will take place. Report. The Lord and his associates appear and disappear by the will of the Lord. They are not subjected to the laws of material nature. No one was able to kill the family of the Lord, nor was there any possibility of their natural death by the laws of nature. The only means, therefore, for their disappearance was the make-show of a fight amongst themselves, as if brawling in intoxication due to drinking. That so-called fighting would also take place by the will of the Lord, otherwise there would be no cause for their fighting. Just as Arjuna was made the illusion by family affection, and thus the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, so the Yadu dynasty was made to be intoxicated by the will of the Lord and nothing more. The devotees in association of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. Thus they are transcendental instruments in the hands of the Lord and can be used in any way the Lord desires. The pure devotees also enjoy such pastimes of the Lord because they want to see him happy. Devotees of the Lord never assert independent individuality. On the contrary, they utilize their individuality in pursuit of the desires of the Lord, and this cooperation of the devotees with the Lord makes a perfect scene for the Lord's pastimes. Om Gyana Kananda Shaganajana Salapaya Chaksam Mitamina Pasmai Sri Gavinaha Panchakopa Tubishcha Kriba Sindhu Devacha Padipano Bhavanagiro Vaishnavibhya Namo Namaha. I don't know, just say, it's also a appearance or disappearance of Vasudev Ghosh. Anyone know? Appearance or disappearance? Anyway, one of the transits coming and going of the devotees, which is equally auspicious, just a couple quick words. Vasudev Ghosh was, of course, a great associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, known for his kirtan. He was one of three brothers. Let's see, Majjalila 11:18 says, here also are Govinda Ghosh, Madhava Ghosh, and Vasudev Ghosh. They are three brothers, and their sankirtan, congregational chanting, pleases the Lord very much. And the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, as far as Vasudev Ghosh is concerned, he composed many nice songs about Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and these are all authorized Vaishnava songs, like the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Lochan Das Thakur, Govinda Das Thakur, and other great Vaishnavas. And then Adi 11:19 says, when Vasudev Ghosh described Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda while performing kirtan, even the wood and stone would melt upon hearing it. So obviously very, very extraordinarily beautiful kirtan by Vasudev Ghosh. And it also mentions in Adi 12:57 that Prabhupada says, excuse me, the Gaura Gonadesh Deepika 140 describes that Vasudev Dutta was formerly Madhuvrata, a singer in Vrindavan. So he's eternally a singer for the Lord, and he continues that in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Okay. So I don't know too much more about him other than what's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Obviously a great devotee, great kirtan leader, one that we recognize. Now, going back to today's verse, we're talking about the disappearance of Krishna's associates here. I'd also like to expand this a little bit today in our discussion and talk about the appearance and the disappearance of Krishna's associates. We often talk about the appearance of Krishna and the disappearance of Krishna. Of course, Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, very well established the purposes for Krishna's coming to this material world. But we don't always speak so much about why do his associates also appear and disappear, and what is the way that they do, and what is happening there. Now, this verse today and yesterday is also talk a little bit about this, particularly the disappearance of the Yadus and how that came about. So the first point, of course, that Srila Prabhupada makes is this is all happening by the will of the Lord. He has made all of these things happen. We shouldn't think the Yadus were a bunch of loose, intoxicated people who, you know, and just became angry for no reason and just fought and killed each other. No, of course not. This was all engineered, arranged by Krishna because of his time for them to wrap up. It was time for him to wrap up his pastimes and similarly for his devotees to also come back with him to the spiritual world. So I'll start a little bit about their appearance, why they were here anyway. Why were all these Yadus and Pandavas here? We go back to 10th canto, first chapter, on Krishna's appearance. Verse 22 says, Krishna is already aware of the distress on earth. For as long as the source of all forms of the Lord remain visible on earth to diminish its burden, all of you devatas should appear as sons and grandsons along with his eternal associates in the family of the Yadus at the proper time. So, of course, we know that Lord Brahma and all the demigods went to Swetadweep and they prayed to Shiradaksha Vishnu. They were on the other side of the Milk Ocean. Lord Vishnu actually spoke to Lord Brahma in his mind, in a voice. It wasn't like he appeared personally, but he spoke to him. And Lord Brahma conveyed the instructions to all the other demigods. So he's telling them, I'm going to be descending. I know about the problems you've come to me about how the material world, especially the earth planet, has completely overrun by all of these demoniac kings and other personalities, and I am going to rectify that. And you are all going to come and help. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary in this verse, says, you should be born along with the unlimited portions of Krishna. Those portions are the Yadavas. He says, O goddess, this is from the Padma Purana, O goddess, all the Yadavas are my people, most dear to me and equal to me in qualities. You should be born as the sons and grandsons of the Yadavas, who are eternal associates of the Lord, and should remain near them. The Yadavas also include the relatives of the Pandavas. It should be understood that the Pandavas attained Svargad, as described in the Mahabharata, but being qualified as eternal associates, they actually went to the Lord. So we don't always take everything the Mahabharata is the absolute last word. Not that it's not true, but sometimes there's more to the story, and the Vaishnava literatures will bring that out, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So it seems as though that the intimate associates, the Yadus, are mostly Krishna's eternal associates. They're always with him in the dwarf in the spiritual world. But now he's asking all the demigods to also come and be born as their sons and grandsons. We know that there are millions, right, of relatives in the extended Yadu family. You know, there are just hundreds and thousands of, you know, so many people. So all these demigods also came, got an opportunity given to them by Krishna to appear in the material world where Krishna was making his appearance. Now, the next verse is also interesting. It's about the wives of the demigods. 23 says, the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the devotees should also appear in order to satisfy him. Now, in this verse, Srila Prabhupada writes a very nice commentary. So it says right from Srila Prabhupada's commentary on verse 23. It kind of explains this, and it's interesting. I don't always think about it this way. It's kind of like how the order of things progress as devotees are making spiritual advancement. So he says, thus a pure devotee, even if unable to execute devotional service completely, is transferred to the upper planetary system where pious people reside. So we know that, and probably quotes verses from the Bhagavad Gita about, you know, one who does not complete may be born in a brahminical family or to a pious family or to a wealthy family. Well, this is including going to the heavenly planets, going to Svarga. So in other words, devotees, you know, hopefully not us, but if we don't make it, you know, we may get this opportunity. Krishna's giving us a lot of opportunities. So this isn't too bad, being born in the heavenly planets. Could be worse, right? So anyway, pious people reside. From there, if his devotional service is complete, in other words, if one continues then and becomes completely pure, what happens? Such a devotee is transferred to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. Herein it is said, Sambhavantu Surastriya. Surastriya, the women of the heavenly planets, that means literally wives of the demigods. Excuse me. Were thus ordered to appear in the Yadu dynasty in Vrindavan to enrich the pastimes of Lord Krishna. These Surastri, when further trained to live with Krishna, would be transferred to the original Goloka Vrindavan. During Lord Krishna's pastimes with this world, the Surastri were to appear in different ways in different families to give pleasure to the Lord, just so that they'd be fully trained before going to the eternal Goloka Vrindavan. So we know this is the process, and this is described by some of our other acharyas very well, when a living entity becomes ready, becomes qualified, doesn't immediately go back to Goloka, but rather is born on a planet in a material universe where Krishna is appearing. That doesn't mean you have to wait around on Earth planet, you know, until the next 4 billion years, whatever, until Krishna appears again. Wherever he's appearing next, and it's one after another, it's a cycle. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura, he says, don't worry about that you're going, what will the devotees be doing while they're waiting? He says, there's no waiting, because Krishna's always appearing somewhere in the universe. And so immediately you go into that universe, probably a lot like Earth, you know, similar experience, and be able to perform in all of Krishna's wonderful pastimes according to one's particular desire, according to one's nature, according to one's particular sthayi bhava, you know, or original spiritual body that one will then attain. And then, of course, after that, one goes directly to Goloka Vrindavan, and that's it, eternally. Sometimes we ask, well, could one come back? Prabhupada was asked this. If, you know, it says in Bhagavad Gita that one who goes there will never return. Is it possible? Prabhupada said, it's possible because you have free will, but you won't. In other words, we've learned. After this experience in the material world, you know, we will have learned. And once we experience the wonderful bliss of being with Krishna and Vrindavan, we will never want to come back here again. So, anyway, this is one of the opportunities that are there. Jiva Goswami says in the same verse, in order to please him by your service, or in order to serve his dear consorts, such as Rukmini or Radha, the wives of the devatas should make their appearance in the best possible way, or they should become qualified. This means he would bless them with suitable qualifications, and they would then appear. So, sometimes we wonder about that. Well, if devotee is, you know, a really good devotee, and they really serve nicely, and they, you know, maybe they're not quite a pure devotee, they still may get the opportunity. Because just here is the example that if they're not fully qualified, Krishna gives them the qualifications. You know, to be able to be with Radharani or to be with Rukmini according to their inclination and be able to complete their devotional service and become completely satisfied. So it looks like that when we look at the associates who took birth on earth, we could say there's three categories, probably really two, but first there's the demigods who are descending to earth for Krishna's pastimes and for their own purification sometimes. Then we have the Nityalila eternal associates, people like Madhya Shoda, Nanda Maharaj, Radharani, and the principal gopis. You know, they're not coming here for purification. They're already, you know, they're either Nityalila, Nityasiddha, or in the case of Radharani, they're actually, you know, pure Shaktis, parts of God, you know. So they're just there to come to help Krishna with his pastimes, enjoy Krishna's pastimes in Gokula or in Dwarka. Then we have the sadhana siddhas, which are those who are coming from anywhere in the universe who are ready now, have qualified to be able to take part in these pastimes. Now, actually, the demigods could really be in either of those categories. Prabhupada explained that some of them are the sadhana siddhas who are becoming qualified, but Prabhupada also in the purport mentions people like Aditi, who was a mother of the demigods, that she would come to participate in prayer. And well, Aditi, we know, is Devaki, right? Because Devaki, and Devaki is obviously not a sadhana, she's a Nityalila eternal associate. So we have both, really, a little bit from the demigods. And then a lot of the demigods will return to their posts, or they may return to Goloka Vrindavan, or, well, I'll get into that later. They may do both. It's all very interesting. Some of the technicalities are like beyond our imagination. And so when we don't understand these things, I basically have two words to explain it all. Achinta Shakti. It's inconceivable. Okay. So, disappearance. Go to the disappearance, which is today's verse. So let's talk about the disappearance of the Yadus and the people from Dwarka, and also from Vrindavan, while we're at it. It's kind of a very interesting story there. Now, what about Mathura? Nobody there in Mathura, right, pretty much. And most of the devotees, what happened? We all remembered Jarasandha attacks Mathura for the 18th time, right? And after he's been defeated 17 times, but he never learns, so he goes back for one more try. And at the same time, Kalyavana is attacking from the other side, from the south, and I think Jarasandha is from the north. So Krishna and Balaram are like, well, what are we going to do? We go to fight one. I don't know why they didn't just split up, but that wouldn't have made the pastime. You know, see, Krishna does things according to what he wants in a pastime to happen, you know, not according to our mundane logic. But anyway, they decided first of all, Jarasandha was about a day away, so they defeated Kalyavana's army, and then, of course, Krishna ran, Kalyavana trying to catch up with him, and eventually he brings him to the cave. Muchakunda, of course, is woken from his sleep, burns him by the fire of his eyes, all right? And there was a reason for that, but we won't go into that. And then he thought, you know, I've got to make a safer place for my devotees. Here we're getting constantly attacked. They're always under siege. I want to make them really safe. So he had a little help from Vishwakarma. They created Dwarka out on an island in the middle of the ocean, off the west coast of India there. So, and as the residents went to sleep that night, and they woke up in beautiful palaces, all constructed and everything ready for them in Dwarka. Very amazing. So anyway, all that family and all that extended family, they're all there in Dwarka enjoying, and Krishna has his palaces, and he has his, 16,108 palaces with all of his queens, and all that's going on. Now, when Krishna is ready to leave the Earth planet, which he has to do on his scheduled time, when it's ready, he's done his job, he's killed all the demons, when he finished up, Dantavakra and his brother Vidurnath. And then all that was left, of course, after that was the Kurukshetra War. A few little more things to wrap up there. So then it's like, after that, it's time to go. And the devotees don't really want to stay on Earth after Krishna leaves. Why would they want to stay here? They came here because of Krishna. They came here to serve Krishna as pastimes. They don't really want to stay here if he's gone. In fact, we've been reading earlier in this canto about, this great pain and, that Uddhava's feeling on separation. And the other devotees, Vidura and Markandeya. It's very, very difficult and painful for them to even stay, to live in. In fact, Uddhava didn't want to stay in this world. He said, "Let me go back with you." And Krishna says, "No, I have a couple more things I want you to do." And one of these was speaking just, as he is now, to give more instruction. And then I guess eventually to go up to Badrinath and talk to Narayan or some of the sages there or something. Anyway, because he had other jobs, but it was very difficult. Now, in the last verse, Srila Prabhupada discussed this idea that we always hear, that he had to remove the yadus to remove the burden on the earth. And I had kind of always thought of that. I couldn't quite understand it. Because there's a huge military and he wanted to reduce all the military influences. But no, Prabhupada explained it very very well yesterday, or Friday, that they weren't a burden. They were great devotees. And he said, and he was talking about how the earth can absorb any burden of population like that. But the burden was one of separation. The separation felt by the earth, by everyone else, on these devotees leaving, the separation from Krishna, their separation from Krishna. So the burden was one of separation. So they had to come back, and they had to, how this is going to happen? Nobody can defeat them. They're the most powerful people on earth, and they're totally protected by Krishna. And no natural catastrophe, and they're not really going to die. They're not going to get some disease. Doesn't happen with Krishna's devotees there. So they had to kill themselves, each other. That's what he arranged. But it's been very clear that this was, of course, completely Krishna's pastime. And so he arranged this. And, of course, as Prabhupada says here, the devotees are cooperative with whatever is the will of Krishna. And this went on. And so, first, the whole Yadu dynasty was destroyed. Not quite the whole dynasty, but, there was a couple of remainders. But anyway, we'll discuss that a little bit. Now, this is described, this whole disappearance, really nicely in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, which is written by Rupa Goswami. And who is our greatest authority that we are all followers of from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Rupa Goswami. We are Rupanugas, right? So anything that Rupa Goswami says, we can just assume this is absolute truth, right? This is it. No one's going to argue with Rupa. So he says, this is beginning on verse 494 of the fifth chapter of Lagu Bhagavatamrita. He says, desiring to make his pastimes in Dwarka unmanifest, that means no longer existing, Krishna himself brought about the pretext of the curse of the sage. When Swayam Bhagavan Krishna appeared on earth, Shiradakshayi, or Aniruddha, appeared into him, and portions of the devatas entered into the Yadus. When Krishna disappeared from Dwarka, Shiradaksha and the Devata Anshas returned to their abodes. Krishna, however, stayed in Dwarka with his close associates, but unmanifest. Unmanifest means, in some sense, the word is aprakriti, means not manifest materially, by material energy. When Krishna appears, as he did 5,000 years ago, it's called his prakriti, or his manifest manifestation. It's hard to say that without saying manifestation, because if you say it's a prakriti manifestation, you're basically saying it's non-manifestation manifestation. So at any rate, I guess we should say it's not manifested by material energy. Okay. So anyway, they stayed in Dwarka unmanifest. The Ankshas of the Devatas and others who appeared in the Vrishni dynasty returned to their places, as did Shirdakshai, who previously merged into Krishna. He says, Krishna performs pastimes eternally in Dwarka with the eternal associates who are members of the Adu clan. Okay? Now, Srila Prabhupada says that in the purport we read that the demigods went back to Goloka. There's no real contradiction. Whether they stay with him, whether they go to Gokula, or whether they stay at their posts. Some of this is explained. Devotees can actually have more than one form. And there's different examples that's given. One place that this is really described quite thoroughly is in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And he talks about, and he gives examples how a devotee can have more than one form. He gives example, for instance, of Nanda Maharaj. You know, sometimes we hear about in Vaikuntha, two close associates, servants of Narayan called Nanda and Sunanda, same Nanda. So Nanda Maharaj is also Nanda and Vaikuntha, and he's also a demigod, some more minor demigod in the material universe. How does this happen? Krishna's unlimited, his devotees are unlimited. They can have as much power or abilities or mystic powers as Krishna chooses them to have. You know, and they don't really think too much of it. They don't think I'm a great whatever, I can expand in three forms. They just do what Krishna wants them to do. So, some of them go back to their posts in one portion and also go to the spiritual world in another portion. That's what some of our acharyas have explained. Anyway, let's talk about the devotees in Vrindavan. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we do not hear much about the residents of Vrindavan after Krishna's departure, right, to Mathura. There's a couple places where we do, and of course he sends Uddhava, he sends Balaram to speak with them, and then he meets them at the time of the solar eclipse in Kurukshetra, right? I think that's the only other time, and that's in chapter 82. But our acharyas have explained that this is out of sequence. The Sukadeva doesn't always tell everything in exact historical chronological sequence. And it's explained with some, you know, Baba will come over, you know, he'll say, oh, this reminds me of this, and he gets excited, he feels ecstasy about something, and he'll go to a topic which may not be right in sequence. And here's how it really happened, according to the Sri Vaishnava Toshini, Sanatan Goswami's commentary in the 10th canto. And I'm getting this directly from the BBT edition of the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, chapter 78, verse 16. Which, by the way, is a wonderful purport where the authors have primarily taken the purports of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sanatana Goswami and written very nice explanation of how all this works. Anyway, so this is reading from that. It says, in the Vaishnava Toshini, Sanatana Goswami's commentary, we find the following sequential list of pastimes. First was the journey on the occasion of the solar eclipse. So that was first what was actually discussed in chapter 82. Then the Rajasuya assembly, then the gambling match, the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, the Pandavas exile to the forest, then while they're in exile comes the killing of Shalva. Remember, right after Shalva's killed in Dwarka, then immediately Dantavakra's there, and right after that Dantavakra's killed along with his brother. And but by the way, that happens actually right outside of Mathura, outside of the gates of Mathura, and it's explained that although it says that he was right there at Dwarka, actually Narada Muni got involved somehow and they ended up both of them fighting in Mathura. And so once he had killed him, he had done his job. Krishna had eliminated all of these demons, which he kept telling the residents of Vrindavan, I'll be right back as soon as I do this job. I've got to take care of all these demons. I have to give, I have to protect the Yadus, give them pleasure, spend some time with them. I have to get rid of the world of all these demonic influences, then I'll come back. So he said this about three times. He says it to Nanda Maharaj, he says it to Gopis, and he says it to Uddhava. And Uddhava tells the Gopis, Krishna said, he will come back. You know, so this is promised. And our acharyas say, Krishna's not going to say he's going to do something three times and then not do it. Krishna doesn't do that. Krishna keeps his word to his devotees. So, killing his solvent Dantavakra. Then Krishna visits Vrindavan. At that point, he was at Mathura. And everyone knows who's been there. How far is Mathura from Vrindavan? 4 miles? 5 miles? Right, it's right there. So he goes to Vrindavan. And he visits there for 2 months, and then he ends up winding up the pastimes in Vrindavan, okay? So after Krishna leaves Vrindavan for Mathura, here's, again, going back to the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, starting from verse 467 of the fifth chapter. In the manifest pastimes on earth, the inhabitants of Raj experienced the pain of separation for 3 months. However, at that time, there appeared something similar to his presence to give him bliss. Then after 3 months, Krishna met with him directly. Okay. Even during that time, for 3 months, they maintained their lives by his vishpurti. Sometimes you see the word spurti. Here it says vishpurti. By tasting the bliss of separation. Vishpurti means a special appearance which was similar to his actual presence. This meeting with Krishna is of two types, through unexpected appearance, which happened after 3 months, and through returning, which is many years later, after the killing of Dantavakra. There's a little time passed when he kills all the demons. Okay? Then Rupa Goswami says, after giving an experience of prema to his relatives and considering the fulfillment of his promise to return to Raja, Krishna returned there on his chariot. And he quotes from Bhagavatam 10:46-35, Buddha said, having killed Kamsa, the enemy of all the Yadus, in the wrestling arena, Krishna will now surely fulfill his promise to you by coming back. Moreover, the Krishna went to Mathura on his chariot, and after killing Dantavakra and his brother Vidurath, arrived at Raja, is clearly stated in the Padma Purana. There's quite a long description of how this happens in Padma Purana, although it's not in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna continually enjoyed with the gopis on the pleasant bank of the Yamuna, covered with attractive trees. Wearing the clothing of a cowherd, he spent 2 months there, filled with the rasa prema, absorbed in the joy of pleasant pastimes. It's said in the Padma Purana, I think that's also in Gopalachampa, isn't it? The description of that. It's in several places. Now, here's from Padma Purana. It is said in Padma Purana, all persons present in Raja, headed by Nanda, along with their wives, sons, cows, animals, birds, attain spiritual forms by the mercy of Vasudeva. They mounted on an airplane and went to the Supreme Vaikuntha planet. So, basically, they actually, he wrapped up his Vrindavan pastimes before the Dwarka pastimes, right? So in other words, at that time, after he killed all the demons, he went there, spent a couple months, and then basically it's explained how this described as Gopalachampa explains this more. There's this huge golden chariot, and they all board it. It's big enough to get on everybody in Vrindavan, and they go back to Goloka Vrindavan, and experience the same pastime. Now there's more to this about the majestic form of Goloka and the Gokula form, but needless to say, it's wonderful. They're completely situated in the spiritual world, back in their eternal constitutional positions, their eternal places. Now, one other last topic here. Why did they not feel separation after 3 months? So Krishna didn't come back for a few years. Now, that's described somewhat in chapter 47, when Uddhava comes to Vrindavan, because he comes fairly soon. You know, right after Krishna kills Kamsa, it's only a little while that he comes and back to see the residents. First he speaks to Nanda, Maharaj, and Yashoda, then he speaks to the gopis extensively. And it's interesting, because in the Bhagavatam, his discussions are very much about Krishna's opulence and about Krishna's power and Krishna's everything, and you can see Krishna everywhere, and nothing is different from him, and Krishna is the super soul, the antaryami within the heart. And all of this, right? So he's talking answers, which is all true, and which all helps us all to remember Krishna, but do you think that was very pleasing to the gopis? That's not what they wanted. They didn't want to hear that. They said, we want to know, where's our Krishna? Where's our sweet, beautiful, wonderful coward boy, Kishore Krishna? We want him. We don't want to hear about Super Soul and all of this, and Bharata Rupa or whatever. No. So they didn't seem very satisfied, but then it's concluded, it says, Shukadeva says at the end that they were satisfied. And all the acharyas agreed upon that. The thing is, though, you might think, why were they satisfied? They didn't seem like they were satisfied. Well, our acharyas, especially Jiva Goswami, it's a very, very wonderful purport for verse 47. And he explains how if you look between the lines, kind of, you know, you study, like, Sanskrit is, for most of us, is just a mystery, right? But apparently this Sanskrit can be interpreted in several ways. I was reading some comment by Bhanuswami, who's, of course, translated all of these works in, from Sanskrit, said until about the 1700s, they didn't use any breaks. It's like one long, continual, you know, like sometimes you see that where one line is one whole word, but they haven't put a break and you've got to figure out how to say it even. Well, they did, it's all like that, apparently, until later when they started breaking it up more and changing it. So what happens is, you know how you get these two A's together and they make the long A, but it can mean, long A can mean not also. So in other words, so many things, that's all I know. That's the extent of my knowledge on this. So don't ask me any more questions on Sanskrit. Anyway, the point is, and Sanatana Goswami does a lot of this. He'll explain, in his purport, he'll take a verse and he'll say it can mean four different things. You know, to find a couple, just tell me, you're the expert, you tell me what it is. I don't want to choose between the four. But anyway, it's not like that. But I mean, he's just explaining different ways that you can understand and interpret. So apparently with these verses, the gopis could take him in very deep ways which weren't quite apparent on the surface translation. So they took him in a very much in a rasa way of understanding very deeply. So Jiva Goswami explains that there are four ways that why the gopis were satisfied and how they could understand the presence of Krishna, even when Krishna appeared to be gone. The first was the obvious, you know, the surface description. He was all pervasive, he's the Antaryami, which, you know, is helpful. It helps for us to remember that, doesn't it, sometimes? That Krishna's everywhere, Krishna's in my heart, right? You know, we feel a little bit connected with Krishna that way, of course. Then this idea of the spurti, or the asperti. Spurti is used a lot in a lot of the descriptions of Krishna and the devotees, and it took me a long time to figure it out, and someone can correct me if your Sanskrit is better. It basically means, as far as I know, a sudden revelation, I guess you could say, but it's internal, a mental understanding, it's actually Krishna's appearance. It's a sudden appearance of Krishna in your mind, which you guys all experience all the time. But brother, some of us just have to kind of imagine this. But in other words, Krishna's appearing in your mind, and they're feeling some satisfaction. And also, as we read, it also is a type of ecstasy and separation, which is also a little bit hard to understand. But the idea is that in separation, it strengthens and encourages one's desire for Krishna. And then when one does have connection, in other words, that you have the separation, viparlamba, and then you have samboga, the connection, it's even stronger, it's greater. It's that much more pleasurable. So it increases the pleasure of Krishna's devotees, the love, the ecstasy, the frame, even more. Thirdly, we've all heard that expression, how many Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So what does that mean? It means in this aprakriti form. We're talking about the manifest and unmanifest. In this unmanifested form, Krishna's always in Vrindavan, he's always in Dwarka. And sometimes you'll see some of the Goswamis write, even to this day, which was 500 years ago, but I guess that means even today, another 500 years ago, Krishna is always there. Krishna's in Vrindavan, having his pastimes. They're in Vrindavan right now, in his aprakriti form, unmanifest. That means we can't see it with material eyes. But if one had total spiritual vision, if one were very, very spiritually advanced, one would see that and understand and enter into those pastimes. And then the fourth one is the prakriti form. He was assuring them, yes, I actually will return. I will return in my manifest form, which is what they really wanted. That was the best. I mean, these others were okay, but what they really wanted was Krishna to return personally, himself, you know, in his visible form, and they could completely enjoy that relationship with him again. So in this way, Krishna kept his word, and he did return to Vrindavan in all of these ways to satisfy all his devotees, and he wrapped it up and brought them all back to the spiritual world. So Krishna comes and enjoys his pastimes of devotees. His appearance and disappearance bring the highest result and the highest happiness to his devotees. And Srila Prabhupada makes this important point, which I need another 15 minutes to cover, which I don't have, is the mood of the devotees, which is the devotees and the associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. They see themselves as transcendental instruments in the hands of the Lord. Whatever the Lord desires, whatever is his pastime, you know, we just want to be part of it. We want to help you. We want to assist you. We want to serve you in this pastime. And guess what happens? The devotee becomes completely happy themselves. When Krishna is pleased, everyone is pleased. We hear that all the time, you know, like the root of the tree and all that. When Krishna is happy, when the devotee makes Krishna happy, Krishna responds and reciprocates and extends his love and his whole pleasure potency to his devotees. So the devotee always wants to bring pleasure to Krishna. They want to cooperate with his plans and desires. Prabhupada gave the example of Arjuna. He was so-called, you know, in illusion, thinking about his family, thinking about all of this, all that. Oh, I can't do this. I can't be in this fight. Even though his nature is to be a kshatriya, greatest kshatriya in the world. It's not like he was afraid to fight. No, usually you'd be happy to have a fight with these, you know. But no, he was put in illusion. And then afterwards, when Krishna explains Bhagavad Gita to him, as Arjuna said, well, that wasn't very fair. You put me in illusion. No, of course not. He's happy. He's heard the highest knowledge. Krishna has given him the absolute truth. Heard him directly from him, has established it. His relationship is there. He's grateful for the instructions and grateful for the opportunity to serve according to his own spiritual nature. Because it is his spiritual nature to fight, to be a kshatriya, to be in that position with Krishna. Another good example is Jayan Vijay. Now, sometimes we hear that they were given the choice of, you know, 3 births as demons or 7 births as devotees, and they thought, well, we want to get back faster. But they also knew that Krishna wanted to fight, and he doesn't get a lot of opportunities. And they actually said at one point that no one's really qualified to fight him except us. Apparently, Jayan Vijay and gatekeepers were extremely powerful. You know, they must have been. He said, well, we can give him a good fight, so we'll go to the material world, and we'll play like we're demons, and we'll give him a good fight, and that'll make him happy. And that's the mode of the devotee. That's what they want. They want to please the Lord. They want to give the Lord pleasure. And when he's self-satisfied, when he's satisfied, everyone becomes satisfied. And my final point, I'm just thinking about this one. Does Krishna have desires? Krishna's Atmarama. It means he's self-satisfied. So does he have no desires? What desire might he have? Be with Radharani, but yeah. To what? Serve devotees. Yes, yes. He wants to serve the devotees. He wants to give pleasure to the devotees. His very, in fact, well, there's even a word for it. It's called ichcha shakti. That's his shakti of desire. He has desires, although he doesn't need anything. You know the difference between needs and wants, right? We hear that sometimes. He doesn't need anyone. But he'd much rather have associates and have his devotees and have his shaktis all there. He has this desire. And his greatest desire, Krishna's very nature is prema. And his greatest desire is to expand prema. To be constantly expanding this love. And that means love in relationship, right? So it's developing relationship. And of course, as you mentioned, the best one is with Radharani. Because Radharani, why? Because Radharani is the most love for him. You know why Radharani is the most beautiful of all the gopis? Because she has the greatest prema. That's explained. In other words, in the spiritual world, it's not, in the material world, it's totally different. Beautiful people can be horrible people, right? And vice versa. You know, but in the spiritual world, it's the same, right? One's beauty, especially in Vrindavan. And so basically, everybody in Vrindavan is pretty beautiful because they all have love, because they all have prema, you know? So anyway, he wants to expand prema, it's his nature. Therefore, he expands his shaktis to enjoy a variety of relationships. And of course, we are jiva shakti or katashta shakti. We are one of his energies. And so, why do we exist? Simply for him to expand his loving relationships. And loving relationships doesn't mean like being the dictator or being, you know, I'm the master and these are all my servants. Although we are, and he is the master and we are his servants, Krishna doesn't like that so much, right? Krishna likes the devotees in relationships of love, he'd rather be bossed around by Mother Yashoda than be the, head of the king of the universe, which he is. He can do that anytime. You know, he can have millions and millions of servants. But he'd rather have Mother Yashoda be worrying about him and telling him what to do out of her great love. Or having the gopis sometimes arguing with him. They can be great, or they can give him a hard time. Someone like Lalita, she's got a very, very sharp tongue, apparently, and can really give it to him, you know? And he thinks it's fun. It's great fun. And Lalita loves him more than anything, but she knows this is giving him pleasure, this is giving him enjoyment. So the devotees are focused on how do I give joy and pleasure and happiness in serving my Lord. And he is likewise focused on how can I give to my devotees? How can I protect them? How can I help them? How can I love them? You know, and how? And then he feels himself actually controlled by his devotees, as described in the ninth canto, the story of Ambarish Maharaj, when he speaks into Vasamuni, verse 64. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm going way over time here. Excuse me. Any quick questions or comments?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
When the residents of Vrindavan went back to the spiritual world, does that just include those in the human form, or?
In what?
The human form, or were there trees
their
and rocks
form?
And?
He mentioned birds. You mean, did everyone, Rupa Goswami mentioned the cows, the birds, the trees. So I assume it was all living entities. Now, would that count rocks? Well, sometimes rocks are called unconscious as long as they're called conscious.
And Govardhan?
Govardhan is not only the greatest devotee, but he's actually Krishna in a sense too, right?
Yes.
Isn't Govardhan both Krishna and Krishna's devotees? He has one of those strange, yeah, he has that odd position.
He still stayed manifest here for the
rest. But he stayed manifest, that's true. Now, the rest of them, most of them did not. The Yamuna River, the sand of Vrindavan, the dust of Vrindavan, and Giri Govardhan remained there. But by the end of Kali Yuga, it's going to be gone. We can see the Yamuna River is practically not even there anymore. Do you know that? It's horrible. The Yamuna River is mostly Delhi sewage water, and Govardhan Hill apparently is shrinking so much every year. That's Kali Yuga. But
Mayapur is becoming more accessible.
Mayapur?
Yeah.
Aha, because Lord Chaitanya's great mercy. That's interesting. Okay, Trivikram Prabhu.
So the demigods, I've read several places that they went back to their position. Like, you know, like if one was doing something in the heavenly planets or here, or the demigods went back. But also you mentioned there that Nirupa Goswami or whoever said that that they actually went back to the spiritual world.
Both are said.
Huh?
Both things are said.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So you can reconcile that one. You can figure that one out. They did both. Or some did one and some did the other, you know. Well, is that it? Thank you all. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You were speaking about how the soul can be present in different forms.
Yeah.
Simultaneously. And, there's this amazing letter that Prabhupada wrote to Saravia in 1968. And in that letter, among other things, he says, to answer your second question, you should know that Arjuna and Kunti Devi are not in Krishna Loka. They are eternally associated with Krishna only in the material world. Just like Krishna is always in the spiritual world. So similarly, he is always in the material world, and his pastimes are going on there also. In the material world, Krishna also has eternal associates, such as Arjuna and Kunti Devi. There's a difference between the body of the soul of Arjuna and Kunti Devi, but
Although Arjuna is with Krishna in innumerable different material universes at one time, still, there's only one spirit soul who is Arjuna. This spirit soul expands into many different bodies, and thus you can understand that there are also incarnations of devotees as well as incarnations of Krishna. This is the power of the spirit soul, that it is unlimited. Such conceptions cannot be understood while one is still in the conditioned state.
Very nice confirmation. Now, I know about the Arjuna one, that's a little different. I'll have to think about that one. But he's saying that there's one spirit soul. It's not that the soul splits, one soul, but in different, you know, just the same way. When Krishna divided the 16,108 for all of his wives, it's not that he took all these different forms or he split himself. It was still the same form. One form, but different locations. I don't know if it's exactly like that with the jiva. It's a little different, maybe, but yeah. They can assume different forms. Yeah. So it's interesting, he says, that Arjuna just stays in the material world. Well, you know, I was actually kind of wondering that, but I didn't want to confuse everyone as well as myself. You know, because sometimes I thought about that. Well, if the, you know, Nityasiddha devotees are continually coming to the material world where Krishna's having his pastimes take place, do they ever get to just stay in Goloka? You know, are they continually going life after life? You know, unless they're doing both, which is likely. What do you think?
Simultaneously.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. They're probably both. Coming into the material world, but also have their eternal...
Because Arjuna, the Pandavas are also in between Radhakund and Samkund to be with Krishna in spiritual world.
Mm.
So both are correct.
Yeah.
You can't just take it only one.
Yeah.
Because if they came in a dream when they were digging that part, Raghunath Das Goswami was excavating Radhakund.
Uh-huh.
That time Pandavas appeared. He said, "We are meditating to be with Krishna in Brajalila."
Ah.
So there is Arjuna there too.
And who where was I reading where they said, although the Mahabharata said that they went to Svarga, that, well, went with Krishna. See, that doesn't answer. They just say went with Krishna. It could be with Krishna in the material world, right? Or in the spiritual world. Like, there's no difference between Gokula and Goloka, right? In fact, sometimes it's said that Gokula is superior.
Because of the paramour pastimes.
The paramour pastimes.
Has to be in...
They're a little different, aren't they?
Yes.
Although that mood can still be there, apparently, in the spiritual world, but...
The form of Abhimanyu may not be there.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I understand. At least Jiva Goswami says that.
Yeah.
That first, now, Jiva and Vishnu disagree on this. It's one of the few things the Acharyas don't agree on. Because, we don't want to get into this now. Okay, let's get it. We can continue.
But this is very nice. Otherwise, outsiders will be thinking, either we talk and come to conclusion, or they will be talking, giving nonsense on the Facebook or these guys. So why not we have our own conclusion? The correct conclusion.
Okay, so the question, let's see if we can define the question clearly. All right, but does Parakya Rasa, would it occur in the same way in the spiritual world? My understanding, especially from Jiva Goswami and some of the others, is that it's different in that because the gopis, obviously they're eternally Krishna's, you know, consort, right? In other words, and often they are called wives or putni, you know, like that is used. You know, for them. So they are, but to increase the flavor of pastime, sort of the fun, the enjoyment of it, you have this conception of the paramour, right? Otherwise, you know, husband and wife, kind of dull, you know. But, you know, sneaking around, you know, trying to get away from Jatila, you know, and the mother-in-law and get together with Krishna. It's really exciting stuff, you know. It's fun. They're really having a good time with it. So then there's the conception. Now, even in the material world, it's described, and this is described actually in the Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami in one verse and elaborated on by our acharyas, that they're called the apparent husbands. They weren't really their husbands because, the gopis expanded another form that their cowherd men thought was sleeping beside them. Well, they were off running around with Krishna and their rasa dance in the middle of the night. So it said, then the caravan never had any bad feeling about Krishna. Otherwise, he would have had all the caravan all, you know, mad at him, jealous, you know, they didn't want that. Because they're all, you know, they all have a relationship with Krishna, you know. So he maintained that by having the gopis all had another form, the ones that were married.
Duplicates.
Stayed at home, yeah.
I know the verse.
Hmm?
I know the verse.
The verse, yeah.
Yeah, because I was memorizing that many years back. It says, Maya Kalpita Tadrika Sri Shilanena Anusuyavi. Maya Kalpita, Jogomai actually created this. That Sadhu Siddha Gopi, that when they literally lamented and cried, all of a sudden they saw their own duplicate.
Mm.
And they were like, oh, she's taking care of the child and other. And then the door opened, that the obstacle, that husband was there, or all this, disappeared from, and they just ran out. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur quoted this. This is this verse is quoted by Rupa Goswami Pad. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave a commentary on it. He said, with that form, they never associated with the husband.
Right.
And has no connection. They are eternally with Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that way, you could almost say that the Parakhi relationship is sort of an illusion, illusory in a sense. I mean, very real in terms of the experience and the pastime. But it wasn't their real nature. Their real nature was being eternal consorts. Now, they say the difference in the spiritual world, is how we started this, is that it's not even like they have necessarily, here is your husband, here's your mother-in-law, here's your wife. There's just this idea that, you know, they may have a husband, or they may have to be. Of course, even the unmarried gopis have the Parakhiya rasa, because it's not legitimate because they're not married to Krishna. Even though they're not married to anyone else, they say it's the same. Because they don't want their parents or the society to find out that they're not married and that they're having a relationship with Krishna. Anyway, I think we're way over. Let everyone go. Thank you all so much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.